WSDQ Dunlap, WEPG South Pittsburgh, The Copperhead, WSDT Soddy Daisy, Chattanooga.
The viewpoints expressed on Liberty Works Radio Network are not necessarily those of the network, its affiliates, or sponsors. This is Liberty Works Radio Network. Now live from coast to coast and around the globe. More real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome to the Truth Hack Hour. I am Steve Hempling, Director of Free Enterprise Society. Free Enterprise Society is also a member of the Truth Attack Coalition. On these programs, I like to talk about the truth that affects Americans' liberty, your liberty. For those that know me, you know income tax is one of my pet peeves, as it is destroying Americans' desire to be successful. My goal is to eliminate the income tax for everyone. How nice would that be? On a broader picture, I want the letter of the Constitution followed. It doesn't seem to be even used unless there's some nefarious purpose for it. And the many Americans I ran into, even at universities, have no clue what the Constitution says. So I have to guess, and I think it's a pretty good guess, that the educational institutes of this country do not teach the principles that made this country great, the Constitution, why it's important, why it's unique, why the Constitution is the only one in the world like it is. But we're going to talk about more than that today, but also you can also check out freeenterprisesociety.com and truth-attack.com on all kinds of problems with the income tax and things we're doing to stop it. And there's even memberships in Free Enterprise Society if you're having trouble with the IRS. We might be able to help. Now, we're going to talk about the IRS today. My guest today, I got a great guest. He's Attorney Donald McPherson. He's a freedom fighter from way back. He's authored several books. He's got the Tax Fraud and Evasion, The War Stories. Another book was April 15th, The Most Pernicious Attack Upon English Liberties. Also, Secrets Exposed, to Eliminate Income Tax Debts Through Bankruptcy. His website is pretty hard to remember. It's beatirs.com, which I like. I'm jealous. I kind of wanted that one. And welcome, Don. It's a pleasure to have you join me.
Hey, great to be on the show. Steve, great to be on. Thanks very much. Hey, years before the web up and running, I had 1-800, and we still have it, 1-800-BEAT-IRS. One day I sat down and asked the phone company what numbers they got available. And they told me, and I was able to arrange Beat IRS. Imagine that. So,
well, you did good.
We've had them for years and years.
Well, you got a lot of accolades. I mean, you used to be called the courtroom commando. You were a West Point graduate, Vietnam combat veteran, former Green Beret officer. You're a board certified specialist in tax law and criminal law. I mean, you've done a lot. And in Free Enterprise Society, we helped. Get attorneys involved with some of our cases in Free Enterprise, and you had five cases came to a not guilty verdict with our members here in the past.
Well, yeah, the one case was the Fargo Five, and thanks again for the referral. Yeah, that was five defendants in one case in Fargo, North Dakota, and all five were acquitted, and that was based on the reliance on counsel defense. And I tell that story. That's one of the stories I tell in my book, Tax Fraud and Evasion of the War Stories. I got about 20 different cases. I explain that the government's got to prove beyond a reasonable doubt willfulness, specific criminal intent. That is, that my client had to know and understand the law and intentionally set out to violate it. In that case, I used what we call the spider trap. And in Vietnam, the VC would use it. The Japanese used it in World War II. And that is, they would apparently abandon a village, and they would hide in a hole with a little thatched top to the hole and have their firearm, their AK-47 in the case of the VC, Victor Charlie, we call him, Viet Cong. And so you'd come into the village and think it's abandoned, and just as the GIs would relax, they would pop out of these spider traps. And there's a particular spider that actually builds a trap like this to catch its prey, and that's where the Japanese and then the VC got the idea. So I used the spider trap in that case, and that we had an opinion letter. You probably remember the fellow's name. His name escapes me. An attorney from Nebraska had written opinion letters that it violated the Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination to fill out this Form 1040 and so on. And these five clients had relied on that letter. And I was concerned if I gave it in advance of trial that the government would move to exclude it from evidence and it would be kept out for some reason. So I didn't want to take that chance. Instead, I had the first client, I think all five of them testified. So the first one I had testify, I had him keep the letter in his vest pocket in his jacket. And I expected the attorney was going to ask, well, surely you went to a CPA, surely you went to an attorney and got advice as to whether or not you were required to file a tax return. So expecting this, but taking that chance, sure enough, not only did the prosecutor ask that question, he had a phone book and threw it down on the desk for the jury and everyone to see and hear it thump on his prosecutor's table and said, in this phone book, there's a list of attorneys. Tell us a single attorney that you called, located in that phone book, and asked for his advice. And my client promptly responded, well, I didn't call any attorney in that phone book, but I got a letter right here, and pulled it out of his pocket, and there was a spider trap. I got a letter right here from an attorney in Nebraska, and he said that it violated my Fifth Amendment rights against self-incrimination and so on. Well, strangely, the judge would not offer for admission of the letter. He would not allow it to be admitted, but he did allow my client to read it to the jury. So that was the same result. And the jury, based on that letter, and we interviewed the jurors afterward, and based on their reliance on the letter and based on the jury instruction, which I'm not sure at that time the Supreme Court ruled yet in the Cheek case, but in the Ninth Circuit, this was a state case, though. So the Ninth Circuit would not have, the federal court would not have been binding on the state court, but there was a line of cases in the Ninth Circuit and some other circuits before the famous Cheek case decided by the Supreme Court, which held that good faith reliance on counsel or good faith belief, good faith misunderstanding, anything held in good faith, it can be, it's up to the jury to decide, of course, can be a defense to the willful failure to file an income tax return or other tax charges, evasion, false return, and so on. So that that was five members of Free Enterprise Society, right, Steve?
Yep, sure was.
And and you asked what topic I might want to address today, and I suggest that we talk about what I call the overt and covert frauds perpetrated by IRS. And I know a lot of folks have written different books and so on this topic, but what I've examined as an attorney, of course, I examine cases and see, well, what's going on with the cases and what does the IRS say and what are they obligated to tell the American public, the truth, of course, and what, in fact, do they demonstrate by their conduct? And in this particular case, and it was decided the year I graduated from high school, it was 1963. This case is based on, if the listeners want to write down the section number of the code, it's 7604, concerns the IRS administrative summons, which is the form 2037. An IRS administrative summons, many of your listeners are probably familiar with it, but basically it's a summons. It's not from court, from a court. That's why it's called administrative. IRS is an administrative agency of the federal government, and therefore they have this form they use to call you in and have you produce testimony and books and records. And, of course, you've got rights under the Fifth Amendment and Fourth Amendment rights and so on to object to that. But before this case was decided, I'll just read part of the statute because the IRS was going by the statute and threatening people, and they still, well, here's, I'm sorry, let me get to the bottom line. I'm going to tell you about a case decided in 63. It's now 2018. So you can do the math, figure out how many years have gone by since this case was decided. Instead of informing the American public of this case and what the rule of law is when they serve you with the summons, instead, they attach to the summons a copy of the statute, part of which I'm going to read. And it basically says, somebody who's been summoned, who neglects or refuses to obey the summons, then IRS can apply to a judge in that district court where this person is located, or a United States commissioner. And I'm not sure what a United States commissioner is, but maybe back when this was written, probably originally, well, many, many years ago. Anyway, that judge or commissioner can enter an order for attachment against this person as for contempt, and then direct the marshals to arrest them. And then they can be brought before the court and punished for contempt. In other words, forget due process. This and Congress, you know, we blame IRS a lot, but Congress wrote this statute. And when they wrote it, they had to know, I mean, they're members of Congress are, by constitutional rule, by provision of the Constitution, are required by oath to swear to defend and support the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
That is true, but it doesn't say they have to read it. I know.
Yeah, right. well, but they got to know some basics such as due process of law. Like, you don't get punished until you have your day in court. Someone claims you owe them $1 million. They don't collect the million until you have your day in court, your due process of law, notice and opportunity to be heard. Well, Congress, in their divine wisdom or otherwise, obviously not in this case, it's otherwise, they write this statute that says, forget due process, forget what the Constitution says under the Fifth Amendment, that you've got a guaranteed right to due process of law. And as the courts have made clear, that means notice. For example, if you're sued, that you get served with a summons. If you're indicted, you get served with the indictment. And then opportunity to be heard, you come to court, and you're heard. Well, no, they write the statute saying, forget due process. You just yank this guy off the street, bring him in, and punish him for contempt because he didn't obey our IRS administrative summons, this piece of paper. Well, fortunately, the Supreme Court, well, I thought they would have hammered the IRS far more than they did in this case. Reisman versus Kaplan in 1963, I don't think they even mentioned due process, but they make it clear they're talking about due process. And basically, you got to give this guy opportunity to come in and be heard and make objections, and then the judge can decide from those objections. So ever since this case, or soon after this case, IRS then, through the Department of Justice, began what you and I are quite familiar with, these petition to enforce the administrative summons. They file a lawsuit.
Yeah,
and they petition the court, and that petition is like a lawsuit that has to be answered, notice an opportunity to be heard, and that suit is then answered by that person. Well, what's such a fraud by the IRS since 63 is they scare people, scare tactics. They want to scare them into not thinking about defending in court, but thinking about, oh, man, I better comply with this thing. Otherwise, I'm going to be yanked into court any moment. There's going to be some marshal who's going to show up at my house or yank me off the street, attach my body. And I don't think I've seen this attachment language in any other statute. Attachment against them as for contempt. Now, I had a client years ago in Tucson, and he had an attorney that was served with a summons. And aside from the attorney-client privilege and so on, we won't get into, I'm talking to this attorney on the phone, and he's got the summons, and he's scared to death. I said, don't comply with that summons. We're going to raise the attorney-client privilege. And he said, well, wait, they're going to come out and get me any minute. And I said, no, they're not. Go read. I gave him Reisman versus Kaplan, and that's a case for you scholars who want to read a case. I've got the F-second site here. I don't have the Supreme Court site handy. Anyway, read that case. It's Reisman versus.
Well, I gotta stop you there. We got a card break coming up. Just stay tuned. You're listening to the Truth Attack Hour on Liberty Works Radio Network. We're talking with Donald McPherson, tax and constitutional expert. We're talking about the abuses of the IRS. Stay tuned for more after this break.
is Liberty Works Radio Network enlightening you to the real problems we face in our constitutional republic? Has it helped you to better understand what has to be done to save America from becoming a third world nation? If so, do your part in spreading this voice of truth and enlightenment to your fellow Americans. Join the Liberty Works Radio Network Fellowship. Go to www.libertyworksradionetwork.com for details.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
This is Randall Yearout on Leaders. Our government leaders swear an oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States before they're allowed to exercise the powers of their offices. This oath automatically requires those office holders to act as a check on usurped or abused power among those within any branch of the government. Why is it, then, that when the Congress assumes for itself powers reserved by the Constitution to the states or the people, the President doesn't object with a defense of the Constitution and refuse to execute unlawful legislation? Or when the President creates Soviet-style czars to violate the public rights, why doesn't the Congress speak up? Or when the court begins striking down the laws of the Union states in violation of the public rights and in favor of international norms, why don't the other two branches bring misdemeanor charges against those offending judges? It appears that our leaders in government think that a non-intervention policy on another branch's behavior is more virtuous than executing the oath they took to support and defend the Constitution. James Madison said in Federalist Paper 51 that if men were angels, no government would be necessary, and that if angels were our governors, no constitution would be necessary. Our constitution is necessary, however, and our public officials are proving to us the very reason this is so. The constitution outlines the restricted powers we, the people, gave to our governors. For our leaders to disobey them is to break the supreme law of the land, which is to be dealt with by impeachment and removal from office. I think the only way to effectively ensure the reinstatement of our American form of law and government is to replace nearly every last congressman with one who will honor his oath.
This constitutional message has been brought to you by the members of the Constitution Party. Visit us at www.constitutionparty.com.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
Dad, where did the clouds come from?
Well, buddy, that's a good question.
Is this worm a boy or a girl?
Why are carrots orange?
Actually,
Dad, why don't you have any hair on your head?
How do birds fly?
Why is dirt brown?
Well, why can't I fly?
Are we there yet?
You may not have all the answers, but if they're comfortable coming to you now when the questions are small, they'll come to you with the bigger questions later.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Give your family everything. Give them your time.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
He went without food, not to lose weight, but to help people lose generations of hate. While many around him rose up with violence, he sat down for peace. When others used religion as an excuse for war, he used it to remind them of love. Mahatma Gandhi made the world a far better place by reaching out with the strength he cultivated within his soul. Soul, pass it on.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
Now live from coast to coast and around the globe, more real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Truth Attack Hour. I am Steve Hempling, Director of Free Enterprise Society. Truth Attack Hour is aired every day from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Time on Liberty Works Radio Network. I want to mention how important Liberty Works Radio Network is. It's, I believe, this network and networks like it are going to be the new mainstream media of tomorrow. More and more people are listening to these types of programs and abandoning what is considered the mainstream media because it's become nothing but a propaganda arm of Marxism or something. I mean, they just don't talk about the law or the Constitution in any way that seems even coherent today. But anyway, if you like this program or others, this is a listener-supported network. I hope that you can support it at lwrn.net. Give a little donation there. You might be able to set it up for monthly donations and help keep this on the air. Now, you may, if you want to write this number down, it is a call-in number. It's 410-848-9191. That's 410-848-9191. You're welcome calling with questions for my guest. My guest is the attorney Donald McPherson. Now, before break, he was talking about the abuses of the IRS, and I do want to point out that, Don McPherson, and there's a few others, but there aren't very many attorneys I've met in 30 years that really care about the Constitution and care about people's rights in this country. And they face problems. I mean, I've seen attorneys that do this kind of thing get disbarred and, ridiculed because they actually want to defend their client over against the government, that like it's a crime or something. So I really applaud the effort of, and he's won a lot of cases. And, all attorneys are supposed to be defending the Constitution, but very few do. I mean, as the saying goes, 99% of attorneys give the others a bad name. Well, Don is not one of those 99. So anyway, we're talking about the IRS summons, the abuse, the misleading of the IRS still today, even though they cannot do what the statute says. They still mislead people and frighten people with the wording on the summons. And you were talking about this case, so I turn it back to you.
Thanks, Steve. And just to finish up with this case, the obvious point is instead of placing this language, this antiquated language, and I say antiquated because the Supreme Court overruled the language of the statute, basically held that it's unconstitutional, denies due process, but IRS is still putting that statute in front of folks, and why? To scare them, just like they scared that attorney I was talking about. He thought that Marshall's going to come out and attach his body, grab him any moment, and haul him into before the judge and be held in contempt of court for failure to comply with the summons. So it's real simple. They don't put that statute in full with the notice of the summons. They go ahead and explain that if you do not comply with the summons, you will be afforded every right under the Fifth Amendment, U.S. Constitution, a due process of law, i.e. this is your notice initially, but you'll be served with a petition to enforce this summons. And then you have time to appear and answer in federal court, just as the same as in any civil case. So now let me go to the next story of overt and covert fraud by IRS by asking you a question, Steve. That question is, if you get a letter from IRS and it says simply twice in the letter, very simply, you have 30 days from the date of this letter to respond. And the letter has a date on it. Let's just say it's October 31st, 2018. When does your 30-day clock start to run? On what date? Yesterday? Today? Next week? Some other date? It says 30 days from the date of the letter.
Any reasonable person with half a brain would say it's the date on the letter.
Yeah. Now, it doesn't say the date on the letter. It says the date of the letter. But any person would conclude it's the date of the letter, of and on, or mean the same thing. I mean, you haven't given me any other dates. The only date you gave me was the date that's on the letter. Therefore, I'll calculate 30 days. Well, guess what? That's not what IRS says it means. They say it means 30 days from the date the letter was mailed. And you don't know that date because you're not going to see a postmark on these letters from IRS. Typically, that's the situation. And you won't know what date it's mailed. And in any event, you've been told your start date the date from which you calculate your 30 days, the answer is the date on this letter. And there's a case right on point just decided a few months ago in the D.C. Circuit, and that's the case of Weiss, W-E-I-S, versus Commissioner. And that in that case, the D.C. Circuit said, well, I won't get into all the nuances as to what conflicts they found within the statute, but instead of looking for conflicts between Section A and Section B, just to pick some letters here, they could have just said simply, hey, due process requires notice and opportunity to be heard. Notice means simply notice. The notice here says the date of the letter. That's got to mean the only date that's given is the date that's written on the letter. So that of must mean on, not the mailing date, as IRS contends, and therefore the client had 30 days from the date that's on the letter. Instead, they skirted that issue and said, nope, it's not. That's not the date. So I don't know what else, just common, you know, basic common sense tells us that we ought to have simple notice and opportunity to be heard, yet IRS is going to skirt the responsibility to uphold and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic, and we should double underline, triple underline, and domestic, because, Steve, I can't think of a simpler example of that. Now, turning
to that judge is pathetic. Yeah.
Well, and it wasn't. It was a majority. It wasn't a split decision. It was all three judges on the D.C. Circuit agreed with it, and folks might think, well, the D.C. Circuit, how many folks are within that jurisdiction? Well, it could be tens of thousands because I don't want to get off tangent here too much, off point and on a tangent, and that is I don't want to be talking too much about the collection due process hearing, and that's what one of these cases was about. Because collection due process cases that are appealed after the tax court decision, of course, the tax court had held it's the date the letter was mailed, and that was affirmed by the D.C. Circuit. And those cases that are appealed from the tax court can, and it's not clear by the statute where you appeal, whether it's your circuit of your location, your residency. For example, if you live in Arizona, then you're in the Ninth Circuit. If you live in New York, you're in the Second Circuit. But it might be required that you go to the D.C. Circuit. So all these thousands, tens of thousands a year collection due process cases could end up in the D.C. Circuit, so it can have far-reaching consequences. And a petition for cert has been filed by my son, Scott, and I work. Let me make clear that, yes, I've been doing this for 40 years, but now I've got the younger generation involved as well, sons Nathan McPherson and Scott McPherson, and you've had Nathan on the phone on the radio show by phone many times.
Yes,
and we'll do so in the future, no doubt. But they're involved in the practice, and Scott's great at research and writing, and he's submitted the petition on behalf of his client. So we'll see what the Supreme Court does. But the of course the uphill battle, the challenge there is the Supreme Court grants cert on, I don't know, what is it, 5% of the cases or so a year that request cert. So chances are against you getting your petition for cert heard, but no harm in asking, and you gotta keep trying, and that's what this client has done recently. Now, another issue that's bothered me as to lack of candor from IRS, and again, I call these overt, whether you want to call them overt or covert, outright frauds by IRS. They've got this list of frivolous arguments that they don't like and for which you can be punished. And I forget the notice number, but IRS has a notice. If you just Google IRS frivolous arguments list, it's a very long list. But at least two items on those lists are clearly not frivolous, and I'll tell you why. One of them concerns the Fifth Amendment, and I know for a fact that they're wrong, because I won a case on this very issue in the Ninth Circuit. That was the Rendell case, R-E-N-D-A-H-L. And Rendell, I was talking about IRS summons enforcement a little bit earlier. Well, that's what happened in Rendell. I had several clients. They were plumbers, and they were subcontractors for another client who was a plumber, and they... And IRS was investigating, I'll just use A, B, and C. They were investigating A, and so to prosecute A, they wanted evidence from B and C as to how much A paid B and C. So they issued summonses to B and C. Well, B and C, A hadn't filed returns. Well, B and C hadn't filed returns either. Well, because they hadn't filed returns, how much they were paid would be, as argued by IRS, income to them. Therefore, IRS would argue they're required to file a return, and they could be prosecuted under 7203 for willful failure to file an income tax return. So representing B and C, I went into district court on one of these petitions to enforce the summons. Hey, we got our day in court. We had notice and opportunity to be heard, and we were heard. And I argued Fifth Amendment, that my clients were at a real and accusatory stage. It wasn't imaginary. That they could be prosecuted for failure to file tax returns, and this evidence would be used against them. That's the exact evidence that the government, the first evidence that the government would put on, would be the what they claim to be income, and that would be evidence of the checks that were written from A to B and C. And in a case such as this, you get what's called an in-camera proceeding, because you don't want to have to confess, tell too much the prosecutor. So you go into chambers with the judge privately, and you say, "Judge, here's the facts of the case," and they would be as I just related. And that's why my clients have a real right under the Fifth Amendment, and we're claiming the Fifth. So he ruled against us and said, "Well, you can use the Fifth as a shield, but not a sword. And I'm going to hold your clients in contempt." And I asked, that means imprisonment. And I asked for a stay pending appeal to the Ninth Circuit. He granted the stay, and the case was taken up to the Ninth Circuit. I was busy getting ready for another trial, so I brought another attorney on board to handle the case to the Ninth Circuit, and the Ninth Circuit reversed and remanded, and the prosecutor dropped the case. And it was reversed on the simple issue that, hey, my clients were at a real and accusatory danger, therefore they had a valid exercise of their Fifth Amendment rights, and therefore they couldn't be punished for that exercise.
Well, I'm looking at the case. You sent it to me, and I mean, you did a good job on the case. It just seems ridiculous that they would go this far. But here's something in there I noticed the judge said that really bothers me, that you have to almost prove that you're going to be charged criminally if you give this information. I mean, that's not what the Fifth Amendment is about. I mean, it just says may. I mean, anything may incriminate you.
Right. Fortunately for me and my clients in this case and many other cases, if you got a failure to file a tax return, any financial information is incriminating, because whether it's going to show you owe less or more tax, it's going to incriminate, because that's the evidence the government's going to use against you at trial. So the courts have held, the Supreme Court's made clear that it can't be something imaginary. You've got to have something, well, they use the terms real and appreciable danger. So for me, that's been a no-brainer, and I've had, to digress just a moment here, I had another case nearly identical, except this was a revenue officer. My client had won the lottery or had gone to a casino and won $1 or $2 million.
There's a heartbreak coming up. You have to hold that thought. We'll be right back. Welcome, thank you. You're listening to the Truth Attack Hour on Liberty Works Radio Network. We're talking with Donald McPherson. We're talking about the shenanigans of the IRS and the Constitution. Stay tuned for more after this break.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
It's not easy being a veteran.
Coming back from Iraq or Afghanistan, not everyone understands that.
You don't feel the same.
Join us at communityofveterans.org.
And connect to others who are going through the same thing.
Because no one knows what it's like to come back unless they were there.
Brought to you by Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America.
I know what you're going through.
I've been there.
Hey, everybody, gather around. I'm here to give you anything you like. You want free college, energy, mortgages, whatever you like. You have come to the right place. Why? I'll tell you why. Who can take your money?
Who can take your money?
With a twinkle in their eye.
A twinkle in their eye.
Take it all away and give it to some other guy. The government.
The government.
The government can. The sunrise.
Who can tax the sunrise?
Who can tax the trees?
Who can tax the trees?
Let you run a business and collect up all the fees. The government.
The government.
Oh, the government can.
The government can.
And the government can, 'cause they mix it up with lies and make it all taste good.
Make it all taste good.
The government takes everything we make to pay for healthcare, climate change, pollution. Throw away the Constitution. And who can give a bailout?
Who can give a bailout?
Tell us to behave.
Tell us to behave.
And make the founding fathers roll over in their grave. The government.
Delicious.
Oh, who can be a failure?
In so many ways.
And instead of getting fired, hey, we'll give ourselves a raise. The government.
People are surprised to learn that natural family planning couples have a lower divorce rate than couples who use other methods of family planning. NFP couples report better communication that improves marital intimacy and respect. For information on how you and your spouse can learn natural family planning in English or Spanish, see the Couple to Couple League's website at ccli.org or call 800-745-8252.
Join the Cavalcade to Freedom, the Cavalcade back to constitutional government. Climb on board and do your part to proclaiming liberty throughout the land. Join and support Liberty Works Radio Network Fellowship. To view the strategic plan, to spread the word, and to get information on joining, go to www.libertyworksradionetwork.com or call the fellowship office at 410-857-5444. That's 410-857-5444. To join the Cavalcade to Freedom. America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting. Now live from coast to coast and around the globe, more real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Truth Attack Hour. I am Steve Hempling, Director of Free Enterprise Society. Truth Attack Hour is there every day from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Time on Liberty Works Radio Network. You can also get more information at freeenterprisesociety.com and truth-attack.com. And even at truth-attack.com, there is a video there you can watch called Innocence Revealed. It has five attorneys and a former criminal investigating agent for the Internal Revenue Service who claimed and shows you that the average American isn't even required to file the income tax. I mean, income tax season is coming up, and if you're still filing returns and being frustrated by it, you owe it to yourself. You can watch this free video and learn a little bit about the law and about your rights. And if you want to write this number down, it is a call-in number, 410-848-9191. That's 410-848-9191. You're welcome calling with questions from my guest. We're back with my guest, Donna McPherson. We're talking about IRS doing some dirty tricks. We've got income tax, talking a little bit about people's rights in the Constitution. Now, before break, you were talking about the summons, and I had a question for you.
Sure.
Kind of hypothetical, because this happened to one of our people years ago, because generally on the summons, at least with our members, we've been fairly successful, I think pretty much across the board on protecting, you know, making the Fifth Amendment stick on the summons. But we had one where we had a guy who was, come and read him his rights that he's under a criminal investigation, then a little later they give him a civil summons. And one of our issues was there, I mean, they're looking for evidence. And when we did a petition, of course, on that one, and it failed because, I think the judge was in the pocket of the IRS, because it seems to me, there's clear and present danger in that situation. So I wonder what you thought about that.
Was this a non-filer?
Yes.
Okay, well, clearly, it's the same as the Rendell case that I won in the Ninth Circuit, and that is, if you're the real... By definition, you're at a real and accusatory danger, which meets the test for claiming the Fifth Amendment, if it's financial information and you haven't filed a tax return. Or if it's financial information and even if... It doesn't mean you have to have committed a crime. It could be an investigation as to your return. IRS thinks it might be false, and they're investigating, and the information you would give them would show that it's not false, but it's still information that could be used against you in a criminal case, in the sense that they're going to put all kinds of financial information before the jury at your trial. They're going to use it against you. You don't know what arguments they're going to make until they make them. So if they're going to introduce it as evidence at trial, you can bet they're going to make some argument about it. And the logical conclusion is, why would they want to introduce the evidence unless it would help the government? They don't introduce evidence that helps you. So
yeah, they were trying to be from both sides of the fence. I mean, we kept up with your stuff. Rendell may have even been cited in our stuff, for all I know. But I mean, that probably was back in the 80s. But that always bothered me, that one thing there.
But on that case, it was not appealed to the circuit court?
No. He didn't want to go any further with it.
Yeah, because I've never heard of a case of that type, a non-filer financial information losing on Fifth Amendment. I would think that would have been a winner. And I was about to talk about a revenue officer that was looking to collect taxes from my client who had won the lottery or casino, $1 or $2 million, and we claimed the Fifth there. The same reasons, and she said, well, that's just tax protester arguments, and I even gave her the Rendell case. And then I heard from her a few months later, and she had gone to IRS counsel, she went to IRS counsel asking for a petition to enforce be filed, and IRS counsel said, no, McPherson's right, and she got back to me and said, yep, you were right, Fifth Amendment applies. And I had a list of other items as to IRS overt and covert fraud. But, Steve, why don't we tell them about the case that you brought to my attention, and I know these folks, because maybe we ought to hit a high note here. And that is a case that was just won in the Ninth Circuit by a young lady who sued agents for violation of her right to privacy and so on. And that's what's called a 1983 action or Bivens action, violation for civil rights. You want to mention that case, and then I'll comment on it, how she won. The Ninth Circuit affirmed the district court, which denied qualified immunity to this agent who insisted on going in the bathroom with this lady and remaining in the bathroom while the lady used the bathroom and undressed enough to use the bathroom.
Yeah, well, it was a search warrant, and they, you know, we've had, and I'm sure you've seen a lot more than we have. I mean, a lot of abuses on search warrants when they get in there. They've taken stuff that isn't on the search warrant, for example, like gold and stuff that is hard to recover. But in this case, they make you sit there during the, you know, I guess you might have an opportunity to leave, but if you don't, you sit there. But it was a couple living there. He wasn't allowed to go to the bathroom, and the guy stood outside. Then she wanted to go to the bathroom. We went with a woman agent, but she wanted to stay inside the bathroom. And she sued. And the ink's not even hardly dry on this case, but she prevailed. And they, not only did she prevail, they published the decision that that agent was out of line. And that, the decision itself, because they protect the agents, where you can't sue the agents if they do something under official authority, but they ruled this agent can be sued outside of that because the agent was not following any IRS rules or laws.
Yeah, and it was, what it was, see, I own case, I-O-N-E versus Hodges and others, and so the listeners fully understand this issue. When you sue federal or state agents, they will claim immunity from suit. And then there's a doctrine of qualified immunity, and that is if they can show that they did what a reasonable agent would do and not violating your constitutional rights. And a lot of cases, frankly, well, these are very difficult cases to win, but they can be won. And you got to show that they clearly violated a known constitutional right about which this agent knew or should have known. And in this case, the woman claimed, the woman agent who violated the rights claimed, well, I had to go in the bathroom to make sure she wasn't just going to destroy any evidence or wasn't hiding a weapon or so on. And the procedure, there was written procedure that she didn't follow, that she's not to go in the bathroom. And that was brought out in the case decision. And I was surprised that it was nice to see there was a published decision so the listeners understand the difference. The circuit courts, the federal courts of appeal, in this case it's the Ninth Circuit because it was a case out of California, they have a choice. They have a choice of whether it's going to be published or unpublished. And if it's published, then it's binding on all the district courts within that jurisdiction. If it's unpublished, it's only binding on the parties in that case. So
other people can use this case now.
Right. And one of the issues.
Well, we have a caller. So let's take a little.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
Douglas, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Thanks.
Go ahead.
I was just wondering what you thought of the notion of the income tax violating a clause of the Patriot Act, which makes it illegal to contribute to the terrorist nation or to support the, you know, a terrorist country?
Good question. Here's my answer. As an attorney, I think the question for an attorney ought to be, what's your opinion as to the chances of a federal judge, either one or two out of three, or in the Supreme Court, 5 out of 9, ruling in your favor on that issue? And my answer is nil, because, and I'm very practical, and that's because they're not going to enter any such ruling, because to them it would bring the tax system as we know it down in a heartbeat, and they're just not going to do it. So they're gonna use every argument, every justification that they can. Now, you might denominate that as obvious judicial tyranny, but call it what it is. I'm result-oriented, and I'm practical, so when my client asks me that kind of question, they'll often say, well, what do you think of that issue? And I say, well, the real question ought to be, what do I think, what's my opinion as to whether or not you're going to prevail on that issue? And that's, so there's my answer. But good question.
Thank you.
Thank you, Douglas. Well, yeah, Steve, as a non-attorney, I absolutely agree that the IRS is a terrorist organization. I mean, people have dropped dead at their mailbox just getting mail from the IRS. I mean, they terrorize people, seriously.
Right.
And there should be no place for that in this country.
but now, what's your opinion as to whether a federal judge...
Well, no, I'm going to side with you. I would side with you on that, but that doesn't make the Douglas wrong and the government right. And you were talking earlier about holding the IRS accountable, and I remember the discussion, and you may remember this in '99 when they were talking. They wanted to change the burden of proof to the IRS to prove you owed something instead of you have to prove you don't owe something. And the commissioner of the IRS was in Congress, and she said, can't remember her name right now. She said, well, if you do that, you might as well close the IRS down, she said. And I'm thinking to myself, well, what's the problem with that?
Trump
lowered the taxes a whole bunch here, and they had record taxes come in with the lower taxes. I mean, that's what happens. So, anyway.
Well, why haven't we seen, what year was it when Reagan was running, and he sounded like a tax protester, and I use the term proudly because you look at IRS Publication 1. It says you got the right to protest. So whatever you're protesting, if you're protesting a war in some far off land or a tax, you got a First Amendment right to protest. So it reminded me watching the debates on you had all these candidates who sounded like tax protesters, and at that time they were looking at the question of, well, what are the alternatives? And of course, we still haven't reached the alternative. They have all these tax so-called simplification acts, but there's got to be a way that's far more simple than what we presently have. And they were looking at ad valorem tax, sales tax, flat rate tax, all these different methods. And
it may be a lot simpler than that. I mean, look, from my history study, tariffs, before the income tax, tariffs covered most of our government. You know, a lot of people don't like tariffs, but it's a constitutional tax, and it doesn't put anybody in jail, and I won't be received threats in the mail and for not buying a car from Japan or something.
what's more fair than a toll bridge? Those who use the toll bridge got to pay the toll. It's, you know, back east, you got expressways that are called turnpikes. That's because in the colonial days, you had an actual turnpike that you had to go through, and they would turn this wheel, and you got through the pikes, and that's how. But you paid to go through, and that's how they pay for the roads. So it's pay as you go, and then of course they get in the argument, well, that's regressive, and so on. They could do so many different things.
The tariffs are bringing in a ton of money right now. And, you know, as long as they're not in real, I don't agree with doing 400%, you know, but reciprocal, I think, is probably fair with other countries. And, you know, as long as it's reasonable, can replace I think it could replace the income tax. But anyway.
Well, remember
the fact there's so many illegal, as far as I'm concerned, unconstitutional expenditures they shouldn't need for their budget to begin with, that we can cut those out, too. But
and then you got the feds messing in state affairs, and Nathan's been on, my son Nathan McPherson's been on a lot talking about Commie Corps, and you know, what's the federal government doing in local public education? They got their hands.
There's the music again. I'm sorry to say the program, we're at the end of the program. Yeah. But thank you for joining me, and thank all of you for listening. This Truth Hope, I'll be hosting this program every Wednesday. Also, check out truth-attack.com and freeenterprisesociety.com on getting rid of that income tax.
Thank you, Steve.
America, born to to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
If I could have a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If I could have a heart-to-heart with my mom.
I'd probably talk about girls.
We'd probably talk about girls.
Anything, boys, school, clothes.
You'd be amazed at what they'll talk about if you give them the chance.
If I had a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If it were real heart-to-heart, I'd tell my parents what I'm going through.
I'd probably talk to him about growing up.
I'd probably tell my dad that I wish we'd do more stuff together.
I don't think it has to be a heart-to-heart. I just want to talk.
Give your family everything. Give them your time.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
Remember when arguments were made before the Supreme Court both for and against the constitutionality of what is known as Obamacare? You probably heard much of the screeching and shouting about this topic in the news. But I would like you to think about something that you probably didn't hear and maybe haven't thought about concerning this issue and other issues that come before the Supreme Court. No matter what opinion the Supreme Court issues in this case or in any case before them, that decision does not have the force of law. Though a Supreme Court ruling is not unimportant, it is legally binding and enforceable only with respect to the parties in this particular case. That means it doesn't affect anyone else. It doesn't become law. With respect to the particular parties involved, it's a ruling. But with respect to the rest of the world, it's just an opinion. Here's the important implication of that truth. The governor of each and every state retains the full right and duty to determine whether or not the individual mandate within Obamacare complies with the U.S. Constitution. Indeed, each governor should determine whether or not the whole scheme of Obamacare complies with the Constitution, rather than allowing it to be accepted as law in his or her state. I believe that all the fanfare and all the radio and TV coverage is a lot of smoke, designed to convince you and me that the Supreme Court is the great and powerful Oz, and that it is the final arbiter of the constitutionality of the matter, and indeed, of all the matters in the country. But if we look behind the curtain, we find that this simply is not true. Why am I so sure of this? I read the Constitution. So can you. This is Michael Anthony Peruca for Institute on the Constitution, bringing you the American View.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
Thomas Jefferson, in his writings, left us many warnings about corrupt bankers and politicians. I place economy among the first and most important virtues, and public debt as the greatest of dangers to be feared. To preserve our independence, we must not let our rulers load us with perpetual debt. We must make our choice between economy and liberty or profusion and servitude. If we can prevent the government from wasting the labors of the people under the pretense of caring for them, they will be happy. What our country needs is a wise and frugal government, which shall restrain men from injuring one another, and which shall leave them otherwise free to regulate their own pursuits of industry and improvement, and shall not take from the mouth of labor the bread it had earned. Jefferson warned that ignorant and free can never be. He was a true defender of the American dream.
The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
Mother Teresa couldn't do it all, but she gave her all. Compassion. She didn't just visit the sick and poor. She moved in with them because they needed help. Mother Teresa couldn't do it all, but she gave her all. Compassion. Pass it on.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.